the whistle. Go, go, go. Second half, my three subs action from the Center Circle Studios.
Time to talk to you soccer again. I know we're still amongst the sports shutdown. I get that. But the kids, they love to play soccer. And to continue the development, they got to find ways to play some ball. And one of the best places in the area is in Arlington, Tennessee. It's up in Northeast Shelby County. And with us today is the executive director of the Arlington Soccer Academy. We say good morning to Sean Andre. Sean, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Appreciate you being with us today, and I know that you have spent several decades, and it sounds so odd because you and I are the same age, but when I look at your resume, it says 40 years of playing and coaching soccer, but I mean, you know, we were amongst the first generations to start as youngsters.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It's amazing.
Playing locally here, probably when I was probably about 8 or 9, kind of got into in the recreational level, then just with it and just pushed on and got my first taste of playing competitive with MFC probably when I was 11 or 12. And then just that was it, man. I was hooked on it. You know, I ended up playing for Fury and MFC, the two biggest clubs around at the time. You know, we're going back to the 80s, early 80s.
And that's Richard really, Boot,
that
right?
was Richard Boot. Yeah, I played for him.
And you do not show up late for Richard Boot. That's what I've heard.
You absolutely do not show up late for his training sessions. And you do what he tells you as well. Otherwise, you'll be doing somersaults in the parking lot in the gravel. So, but yeah, it was great with those guys, you know, got to be mentored by some really good coaches in the area. Gary Leventhal, EJ Gilley, last year got to train with players when I was young. So got great experience, you know, in a great organization at the time.
You talked about playing when you're in single digits age wise. Where did the first opportunity to play soccer? Where did the love come from? Where, you know, at what point did your parents just put you in soccer? Did you ask about it? Where was the seed planted?
Yeah, I think you know, only child, so obviously I had to self motivate myself and find ways to keep myself occupied all the time. So I always had just this highly competitive spirit. And I was very self-motivated to always, to win, you know, at everything, no matter what it was. I wanted just to win. And so, you know, the motivation really was kind of within me at a young age. And once I found that there was an opportunity to express that on the field, I was like, man, there's no way I'm stopping this. So, you know, that the competition, being out there, just that competition I had within myself to always achieve the best I could is what really drove me. So, you know, my parents obviously supported me. They got out there. My dad was out there every day with me, bringing me to practices, playing, you know, after practice, we go home and he's playing, you know, spending all this time with me. And, you know, I can't thank them enough for all the support they gave me. But yeah, I'm a highly competitive person, and that was shown at an early age. So
you got to play, you got the ball at your feet. Who did you look up to sporting wise growing up? And it's always interesting to hear answers from guys in different age groups to see, because soccer was so limited in its availability media wise back when we were growing up. What caught your eye back then?
Yeah, you know, I think obviously, you know, some of the greats, you know, in our age was, you know, it was always Pele. We always went to Pele as being the greatest player ever. And I think, you know, we didn't have the opportunities that we have now to see a lot of stuff on TV. I mean, we didn't have YouTube and all these access to all this information that the kids have now. So really, it was growing up, seeing the local professional players. When the Memphis Americans were around and the Storm, I was fortunate enough a couple of years, we lived in this apartment complex. And it just happened to be where most of the Memphis Americans were living as well that summer. So you can imagine I got to go out and hang out with those guys as a little kid and just following them around the pool and watching them kick the ball around and just being part of that. I think that's kind of what drove me at an early age to play and having those experience with those types of players.
Growing up, and maybe you watched the whole game, but I found myself playing half the game in the Coliseum when the Americans were playing out in the hall when they'd give away those little soccer balls.
Yeah. Yeah. The Coliseum was more of a place to play than to really watch a game, you know, running around that circle all night. And then, I had a great story. We were there one night watching a game, and this is as we got into high school. And, yeah, we ended up going to the game, and, you know, the game was over around 9:30 or 10. And then, we were supposed to head home, you know, whatever our curfew was, 11:30. You know, it's a little bit later in the evening. And, you know, we check in with our parents, and, you know, of course, we've all made up an excuse that we're still at the game and it's in overtime, and we're going to be a little bit late getting home. And of course, my dad says, son, he goes, watch the news. The game is over. It's time to come home. So yeah, we got caught on that one. And anyway, he was forgiving, I think, because we were at a soccer game. So, yeah, good stuff.
When Stan Stamenkovich is your babysitter, everything's okay. Or Carbignani.
Yeah. Carbignani, now we spent a lot of time together. It was great. It was great getting to know him as an adult or a young adult, and then growing throughout the years in our relationship, and seeing how he's evolved as well as a person, has really been fun. You know, he's one of the guys that I definitely looked up to playing, even though I couldn't understand a word he said. So I definitely looked up to him. And of course, I don't know if you've ever had a long conversation with him, but he likes to hit you. He's talking to you to make sure you're paying attention. So yes. I remember we were driving back from a tournament one year, and it was about a 3 or 4 hour drive, and my right shoulder was just about by the time we got done, because he kept slapping me, telling me, making sure that I was looking at him. I said, Tony, I'm driving. I can't keep looking at you while you're talking to me. So yeah, it's good stuff.
Hey, we were on a podcast, and he kept hitting us, and we were like, hey, Tony, they can't see us, and it wouldn't matter if they saw us anyway.
Well, and if you go back and you listen to that one, he's hitting the microphone too. So every like 25 seconds, dum, dum, and it's echoing.
Oh,
so,
yeah. I love him. I love
him. So you got bruised by South American passion. So that's pretty funny.
Exactly. But I love Tony.
We love old Flacco for sure. So playing, where'd you start? What positions did you like to play most when you were growing up?
You know, I just started out just playing on the field. And I think after about a year of that, I got stuck in the goal because obviously I was tall and, you know, I actually was very coordinated and athletic, and they put me in there and, you know, saved a bunch of shots. And it's like, oh man, this is where you need to play. So it really wasn't by choice in the beginning. As most kids in the early ages, coaches put them in different areas to try them out. And, you know, I didn't really love it at first. But after I started seeing that, you know, that competition within me and people couldn't score on me, then it just, I said, I want to be better. I don't want anybody to score on me. And that really just kind of sparked that, that desire to play that position. So, yeah.
You kind of get to run the field too, you know, from the back, you know, you have the best vantage point, even from coach's perspective on the sideline, where you can kind of bark orders and people are like, you know what? He knows what he's talking about.
Absolutely. And I think that's what drove me into coaching as well, or part of it was already instilled in me, able to control or organize a game from that position, you know. And I was already used to, in a sense, coaching, you know, coaching the back, launching everybody in front of that. So it was just kind of a natural transition to go in from playing that position into, you know, leading a group of people on the field. I mean, I'd already been doing that for, you know, for most of my playing career in the youth organization.
Did that turn you into a worrywart as an adult? I played in goal for different reasons, because I was fat and slow. So really mine was do the least damage. But as a goalkeeper, as I began to learn a little bit, I learned, okay, well, if I see the ball in this area, if they play it here, I know we might be in trouble, or, oh my God, I hope they don't try to take on this guy on our defense because he's going to be able to slide it through. So were you able to kind of see things in advance and kind of, I don't know if that turned you into a worry work, but, you know, for me now, I'm always worried about, okay, well, if I go here in the grocery store, you know, is this going to happen or that? goalkeeping is a different breed, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, and it was kind of weird because, you know, they always talk about good goalkeepers have to be a little bit insane or a little bit crazy, and I actually welcome that. You know, I kind of wanted my defenders to mess up so that I had the opportunity to shine. And I'll be honest with you, there was times where I might call off defender or direct them in a different way just so I could have the opportunity to have the glory and have the attention, you know. And I made some mistakes doing that as well, you know. I made some bad decisions. But it was always about, you know, when I was playing that position, I just had a lot of confidence, you know. And I think that, like I said, I think that just from an early age of having to, you know, being an only child, not having siblings, having to entertain myself and find ways to compete, making things competition. I think I just welcomed that, to be honest with you. I never really worried about it, you know. Obviously, you know, anticipation of a competition, you know, you're going to get nerves and all of that. But, man, I just loved it.
Hey, Brody,
to do something in that game.
Brody Shaw was a hell of a goalkeeper at Kirby High School. Still surprised it did not name at least part of the field after him, because he was part of a team that helped put soccer on the map at Kirby, at least for a time being. I know there's been a bit of a renaissance through
for a couple
the
years.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, you know, they've gotten absolutely a bit better. Talk a bit about when you were playing, about playing high school ball versus playing club ball, and how different of a beast those can be in regards to technical ability and also parity within a league or a conference.
Sure. I think the biggest thing between the two, and looking back at it now as an adult and having kids, my own kids, gone through and playing both. High school, there's so much camaraderie there, and really playing for your friends. You know, the attention, you know, the big man on campus, you know, you have a game and the next day everybody talks about it. It's such a great feeling. And that also drives you as a competitor. You know, you want that. If you're going to be a competitor, you've got to have some type of that in you. You want that attention. You want that experience. And being able to share that with some of your closest friends was incredible, you know. Now, when you're talking about how the games evolve, you know, and the technical piece of the game, the two different ones, you know, obviously, you know, club, we were able to be around more coaching, players who, you know, had the same likes or same interests, you know, whereas in high school, a lot of times you might have a team of 20-something players and, you know, maybe half of them are really super competitive players, and maybe some of the other ones have been, you know, suckered into playing by coaches because they run really fast or things like that. So the difference in the club was, you know, it was a little bit more competitive, but it was in a different way. You know, it was the technical training. I mean, you're playing in tournaments and, you know, playing in ODP, and, you know, your friends aren't really there. Your teammates are there. But you get done with the training or you get done with the game, you go home and that's it. So that's really, that really comes within you, you know, what's your drive to put in at that level. Whereas the high school, there's a little bit more of a recognition of what you were doing.
Sean Andre joining us today on the podcast, executive director of Arlington Soccer Academy. At what point did you decide to begin coaching?
Yeah, my senior year, after I got done playing and going into that spring season, playing competitive, I'd done so much, and as much as I wanted to play and as much as it drove me to play and the love for the game, I was just like a lot of kids. I was getting burned out because I was just doing so much, you know, every week, you know, training every week. And a goalkeeper position is very demanding. Physically and mentally. And so, you know, it's a little different going and, you know, beating up your body, you know, running and doing fitness and pushing, than it is hitting the ground 2, 3, 4 days a week, you know, for hours and just having to deal with that recovery. And it's not easy, you know, and it does take, it takes a certain mentality to deal with that. And so I was getting to the end and I was just like, you know, contemplating, you know, I want to play college, but do I want to keep doing this? And I won't lie, there was a girlfriend involved at the time, and decisions were probably being made for different reasons. So through that process, when I was trying to figure all that out, a buddy of mine who was coaching a U16 boys team, and he asked me to come out and help. You know, so during that spring season, I came out. Of course, I was still playing a bit, and anyway, started helping him, and just really found a connection with the kids, you know, in a different way. Now I was a coach. I've always kind of been a coach on the field with my teams. But now I was having the opportunity to be involved with these other kids and seeing how they responded to me, obviously being, you know, a younger coach, being 18, turning 19, and, you know, being a mentor for 15-year-old boys. You know, I can remember playing when I was that age and I had younger coaches. We all just thought they were the coolest thing ever. But their response, you know, of how they took me in, just helping them out. I mean, I fell in love with it. I just fell in love with it. And I think, like I said, my calling was, you know, it was such an easy transition because I had been already doing that. You know, I'd already been coaching for so many years. I just didn't really know it. You know, I didn't really know what that was. So, yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. So then I decided, you know what? I said, this is kind of what for the game that I had that I was kind of questioning as a player came back in, you know, and it was right there. It was right there in front of me. I was, man, I really want to do this. How can I get more involved? So I ended up getting involved with the club at the time was called the Americans, which was kind of a spinoff on the local team, and ended up taking that team on the next season and coached them and just, you know, fell in love with it. And then eventually just moved on to coaching with Fury and it's never stopped since.
Can you talk a little bit about your licensing process? I know as executive director, you and your colleagues have to go through a lot of time, a lot of expense, and probably quite a bit of travel to be able to obtain licensing. Can you talk a little bit about that and what that has meant for you and your professional development as a coach?
Absolutely. You know, that process, and we're talking about what's changed over the years, is obviously coaching education, how much it's progressed throughout this entire country, and having the opportunities and having access to that education has obviously grown the sport and made it a better place for everybody. You know, as a young coach, you know, when I started, you know, I'm just basically coaching on basically what was given to me by my coaches, what I had learned from the games, but it was still a lot of just basically not really managing people, but just managing a game. So understanding the game as a player coming right out of it is a lot different than understanding the game as a coach and understanding people. Which is what we do is we coach people, you know. Right. I love the quote. You hear a lot of the great coaches talk about they don't coach soccer, they coach people who play soccer. And I really try to live by that. And if you coach people, soccer part is easy. But as far as the education piece, you know, getting licensed, going through the Federation, US Soccer, going through United Soccer Coaches, both of them have great paths. To take a young coach into and develop them throughout the years and going. I found that the biggest thing was taking those courses is being around other people and learning from other people. And actually, you know, the biggest thing I always tell my coaches is, you know, and with anything in life, if you have confidence, you'll do a good job. And a lot of these courses are designed to number one, give the coaches, I mean, you have to be willing to put the work in. But if you put the work in and you're willing to learn and you're open and you can leave your ego at the door, you'll gain confidence and knowledge that'll help you become a better person. So I think that what's out there and the way it's laid out, a lot of time, you know, it takes travel, but you know, it's worth it to me. And to continue that education, you know, I see so many coaches, they get to a point and they think they know it all, you know? And I always tell them, if you ever get to that point, you're done. You know, if you're not willing to learn something new every day, for me, I learn stuff every day. And my coach from everybody. So I think what makes a great coach is really somebody who can coach people and understands what that means. A great quote. I always love this quote. I always share with my with my coaches, Theodore Roosevelt. I'm sure everybody's heard this 100 times, but nobody cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And that's so true. You know, you can sit there, and I've told coaches, it doesn't matter. You know, I got guys that go out there and they're, you know, tactically talented, but they forget about showing the kids how much they care about them first. Yeah. And without that, those kids aren't listening to them. You know, they could be the best coach in the world. They're not listening. So we're really trying to instill that into our staff. And I try to live by that every day. Every time I take on a new team, you know, how can I get to know these players? What can I do off the field? That's the key. That's the key to being a good coach.
I got a question for you, Coach. Just stepping back just a little bit, when you first became a coach, 18, 19 years old, right? And that had been fun for the kids, but how did you manage their parents then coming at you? I mean, yeah, you're an assistant coach, but they probably looked at you and like, well, what does this kid know? You know, how did you kind of quell those kind of concerns from the parents?
Yeah, with a big chip on my shoulder.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the parents at a young age, they look and they don't necessarily respect you. They don't necessarily respect all the things you're saying. And it's funny. I talk about that all the time. With, you know, I thought I knew everything at 18 and 19. You know, and my approach to who would approach me about their kids. If they didn't like what I was telling them, too bad, you know, because I was right and they were wrong.
Right.
And it took many years. It took me to get that and to understand what that really meant and how to deal with the parents. Because to be honest with you, at that younger age, I wasn't by that for people. I was more concerned about the X's and the O's. And here I am coming in. I know soccer. You don't. You played. I have. And I didn't understand how important it was to build those relationships and to listen to people, and to work together to find that common. And so, yeah, I didn't handle it well at all. I'll be honest with you. I didn't handle it at all, when I was younger, but, growing up, you know, and then having my own kids, I always tell everybody, until you have your own kids and experience it with them, you'll never understand it. You know, I don't care what you can all day long. Until you have your kids going through those types of, you know, that environment and those life experience, you just don't understand it. Right. So yeah, it was hard. It was hard as a young coach. So I always try to take on that mentor position with our younger coaches and try to share that experience with them and try to give them that guidance, so that they can deal with those times, because they're going to come and they're all going to mess up at some point. They're going to handle it wrong. And it's just, I think, experience. And Tim, it goes back to what you were saying about the license and experience with that. You know, some of it is just growing and understanding, you know, from your mistakes. You know, you can take, there's a lot of guys that you can go through the licensing process, but until you have that experience and know what it really, truly means, that's kind of where you are. So.
Sean Andre, the executive director of Arlington Soccer Academy, joining us on the podcast today. Sean, with the sports shutdown, I'm sure that you've got a bunch of kids that are just dying to get back on the pitch. I'm sure your coaches and you're ready to get back out there as soon as possible. What are some things that clubs are doing right now or can do right now to continue development and not completely just stop the momentum?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Shutdown happened, we were fortunate to have already prepared a digital curriculum, a distance learning program for our players and for the club. We actually started working on that about 2 or 3 weeks out when we kind of saw the trend that things were probably going to shut down a bit. We obviously had no idea it was going to be this long, but we did have an idea that we were going to have a break. We felt like at the time that it would probably be at two or three week time period or month. So anyway, we started working on a program that would allow us to continue their soccer, their coaches through the club. And we felt that was going to be critical for their development, you know, instead of just sitting around and not doing anything and not taking a break for that period of time. So that program consists of, you know, obviously a lot of this is driven by how much players can do at home on their own. Mm-hmm. But we're doing Zoom training calls, you know, everybody's using Zoom now. We'll have, you know, two sessions a week where we'll actually jump on with a team, do a training session, individual work where the kids can work with the coach. And the great thing with that is the kids have the opportunity to be with their team, even though it's at a distance and it's a different environment for them. And to be honest with you, in the beginning, it's a little awkward, just like it's been awkward for all of us. Right. Trying to talk, you know, through a computer and look at each other on a screen. And but, you know, the opportunity for them to still come together as a team, I felt was important, you know, and keeping that relationship with them and being able to have time together was it has been incredible. We're doing just like a lot of the clubs are doing, you know, they're sending stuff out to their teams. You know, kids are tracking their fitness. Right. Doing different skill work, things like that. We have our kids. We partnered up with a company called Yeah, which offers an online content program, skill. The kids actually have an app where they can go in. They can go through skill sets, actually do them. There's a challenge for them. They video themselves. They upload them. And then there's a virtual coach who grades their video. And they either pass them or fail them. And they give them comments and stuff. So that's been really fun for the kids to use that, because there's a leaderboard and that creates competition and challenge for the kids, and they get involved with that. And then we're doing some Zoom nights where we get together, we do trivia, we do tactical sessions and discussion sessions. I did a session week with my U13 girls team where we worked on goal setting, and we had them set out their goals for the next 6 weeks and what that looks for. And that great session, they're turning in their goals. We're talking with them. So it's a lot of good stuff there. But yeah, the distance learning has been a challenge, for all of us, from the coaches and from the players. But, you know, as with anything, I think coaches and great organizations, look for that challenge, you know, mm-hmm. And we talked about this in our leadership meetings with Tennessee Soccer that, you know, we always look for how do we make a good thing out of a bad thing. One thing the game's taught us for the players and the coaches that we all try to find hope and find a way to solve the problem. So this is just one way that we felt it really wasn't even a choice. I mean, I said we can't let our kids not have anything. We can't let them just sit around. We've got to provide something for them and whatever that looks like. And so I've been really proud of our coaches for working hard. I'll be honest with you, you know, this digital learning or distance learning is a lot harder than for coaches than just showing up and coaching soccer.
Yeah.
And the one thing I have noticed, guys, is that our coaches and our players have actually connected even more now than they have on the field. They've had that opportunity to really communicate more. Learn more about each other. Right. It's been a great thing. And to all the clubs locally that have been doing that, I think it's great.
As we take a look moving forward, and we don't know when everybody's going to get to hit back the pitch, are you guys in pretty good shape? Do you still have all or at least most of your coaches on staff through this?
Yeah, so we have not cut any staff during this whole process. All of our coaches are being paid. They're just coaching in a different way now. You know, they're using this distance learning program to coach. So they're still meeting criteria. We have weekly coaching meetings. We have one tonight every Monday where we discuss the week, ideas that we want to maybe put in place, things that we've done well the past week. We share ideas, what's worked, not working. We're always trying to adapt and try to find new, better solutions. So yeah, you know, they've been on staff. We have no idea what next season's looking like. You know, we've all been hopeful is what we can do right now. We'd like to think that we're going to be able to get back on the field at some point. whether it's for a couple of weeks, maybe to have some practices, maybe we can get a game in. That would be great. And on our weekly calls with all of the local clubs, we're all in agreement with that. We want to see some sort of to play for these kids, you know. And if it doesn't happen, then obviously we'll hopeful to start the next season. There's just a lot of things in play that we just don't know what that's going to look like. And we're still finding the answers to that.
Brody, anything else we need to touch on with Sean today, you reckon?
I just hope that he calls his one coach. I'm talking about Coach Merlin there. I hope you call him the Wizard. That's all.
Merlin the Wizard. Yes, I will make sure I do that. You know, he's a great guy. Worked hard with the kids. So
I was just running down the roster of coaching staff that you have, and I was like, Merlin. Oh, God, yeah. I hope his nickname's the Wizard. I really do. But no, I wish you all the best of luck. I agree with you. I think that this distance learning thing is great for the coaches and the players. Like it's elevating our level of communication with each other, and not just through text message. It's great. So yeah, I think on the field that you're going to see this level of like almost telepathy with some of our players that you see on the pitches and stuff that you're going, how'd they figure that out? And it's only because that they have this like now this connection that they just didn't have before. You didn't have time to develop that really. So it's good stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's been a great opportunity to have that. You know, all the things that we want those kids to be doing on their own. That just never seemed to find the time to do it. We're actually able to do it now.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been great.
Sean, can you tell us a bit more about Arlington Soccer Academy, where we can find it online? Because I'm sure folks would be kind of curious in that software, that app where the kids are being graded by a virtual coach on some of the challenges that they have. Where can folks find out more about Arlington Soccer Academy?
Yeah, they just need a website, arlingtonsocceracademy.com. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram. All the information's there. It talks about the program, talks about our philosophy, the age groups, what we're doing as far as our digital programming. Lots and lots of information there.
All right, Sean, thank you so much for joining us today, and really appreciate you sharing some of your insight, sharing your story, and telling us a bit about really a unique perspective when it comes to youth coaching, and that's when you can't play the games and you can't even get together. There's always a chance to learn. Thank you so much, Sean, and good luck coming up in the games, whenever they may be, and again, thanks for all that you guys do for youth soccer.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
More next on My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey.
This podcast is now powered by Podcave, the complete toolkit for podcasters.
But we want all of our time going into making the podcast as entertaining and as interesting as possible for you. So that's why we ditched our old services and actually made the switch to Podcave.
Yeah, combining all the tools that we need to make the best shows we can to make them available on all the platforms you use and to always stay connected with you. Now, Podcave provides unlimited audio storage for all of our episodes, new and old. They're always available whenever you want them.
Our website, by the way, it's included, built in to Podcave. So you can, you know, find us on one place.
It's really that easy. And by the way, I know there's a hang up. Music and soundscapes that we use on the show, well, they're professionally made and fully licensed by Podcave. So you don't have to worry about finding them, nor do you have to worry about getting sued for using music without their permission.
That's such a big deal. We get an email, by the way, and text engagement tools to stay in touch with you. Guest booking tools, episode planning tools. Podcave even includes customizable news feeds so that we can stay on top of the latest headlines, which is a huge time saver.
We used to have to piecemeal all this stuff. It cost hundreds of dollars every month, and we had to have all these different accounts with different passwords and different windows. It was a mess.
To say the least, it was a mess. Podcave put all that together, one spot, and it only costs $49 a month. Hosting and distribution, a killer website, episode planning, everything we need, $49 a month, Tim.
Save time and money with Podcave. Try it free for 1 month. Go to podcave.com/my3subs and get a month on us. That's podcave.com/my3subs.
This is My Three Subs, a soccer odyssey. And we we have added time to the podcast.
Sean was a great interview. And
good guy.
And Arlington Soccer Academy sounds like they got a great plan. You know, we've talked to Germantown Legends before with Kerry Talley. We've also talked to some other organizations as well. We talked to Memphis Football Club with Tony Carbagnani.
Yep.
And I know they really care about kids. And there's some other clubs out there. And we want you to reach out to us at my3subspodcast@gmail.com. We're not playing favorites. We would love to have you on. And from time to time, we're going to need content. And we want to talk about youth soccer and club soccer, not as a throwaway, but because it's so important to the next generation of players that we want to hear from each organization. How do you do these things?
Well, every time we talk to a coach or somebody who's in the upper echelon of, you know, the pro leagues and stuff, they always talk about the youth movement, this, that, and the other, and how important it is. And believe me, eyes are watching, especially now here in the Mid-South and stuff with a pro team in-house. We're sitting there going, okay, who's the up-and-comer? Who is that hometown hero that's might take it to the next level? You never know. So, yeah, reach out.
And during the break, I forgot to ask Sean for a link or some help because I want to try some of that virtual coaching and get scored.
Yeah.
That way there's always whoever is the worst on his team will only finish second worst. I can at least establish the baseline.
I think what you have to do, because you are a goaltender, Tim, and I feel like you're getting left out, you got to grow that epic beard thing that's going on.
Sean's got the Duck Dynasty.
He's got this epic beard, and so does Tim Howard. Got that epic beard thing going on. I think you're missing out, buddy.
I would be afraid that I'd look more like a grunge 90s grunge band guy, because I still have, I have that youthful look, but that brown beard would just look like I should be touring with like Collective Soul or Seven Mary Three or something. I don't know.
Candlebox.
Yeah.
Should Tim grow out the beard? Let's put that to a vote. You can hit us up. We are on Facebook, Twitter. We are at My3Subs on Facebook and Twitter. My3Subs Soccer Pod on Instagram.
And we need to get on some tank tops, maybe sneak down to AutoZone Park, of course. Memphis 901FC, as we mentioned, they are now training in individual and small groups down there. And they had some pictures out earlier this week showing that they were down there getting some work in. So, you know, we're just kind of trickling our way toward possibly some normalcy.
Not mad. Not even a little bit.
No. So, catch us. Did you already plug our social media?
Social media is done. If you want to shoot us a message, you could do that at my3subspodcast@gmail.com.
That's right. And like we said, youth clubs, we want to hear from some of the other ones as well, because we do want to feature you from time to time. We love to mix up the topics, and youth soccer is one that's near and dear to us. It's kind of nice to talk about that today. And then coming up next week, we got a little bit of youth soccer, but really the big topic is indoor soccer. We're going to talk with one president.
Changing the pace.
In Major Arena Soccer League. That's coming up next week on My Three Subs. Thanks for listening, everybody.
There's the whistle. Thank you for listening. Check out more My Three Subs podcast, A Soccer Odyssey.